across Northern Ireland, on your radio, and on BBC Sounds. This is The Stephen Nolan
Show! This morning, policing, yet again, and the situation in which we now are talking about police officers who are under criminal investigation during the GAA celebrations. Jim Allister on the programme saying the law's the law, no exceptions, look at the driving. We also understand that some of the police officers, some other police officers are under criminal investigation for putting the blue lights on, sounding the sirens. Is that over the top? Others, Alan McQuillan, for example, saying you can give a warning, you can have a word with someone, but is that proportionate? That's what we're discussing on the programme this morning. The Stephen Nolan Show! Let's find out what's happening within the Ulster Unionist Party. Jim McCormick reporting this morning that there's growing speculation over Doug Beattie's future as leader of the Ulster Unionist Party. Well, what does that mean, Jane? Is he going to stand down?
It's not totally clear, Stephen, but what I would say to you is that we have multiple sources telling us that it's looking very likely that Doug Beattie could at some point step down as leader today, because we understand that there have been growing internal tensions about him staying on as leader in recent weeks. We are told that this all ties back to a selection meeting for Colin Crawford, who became the new North Antrim MLA when Robin Swan moved to Westminster. We understand at the time that Doug Beattie wasn't happy with how that had gone. And I think there has been tension simmering away underneath the surface since that took place mid-July. And it sounds like this has now come to a head. And we understand that there will be a statement at some point from Doug Beattie today spelling out what he plans to do. But I should say to you, you know, we felt it was important to put what information we have at this moment in the public domain.
And what does that mean, not happy about the selection process? Do you have any more on that? Why wouldn't he be happy?
Not a great deal. I will say our understanding is that there were a number of candidates in for the job. There may have been a view that Doug Beattie may have wanted somebody else to get the position. Now, I should say that I have tried to contact Doug Beattie directly to put some of what we know to him. We've had no response so far. It just sounds like this has become incredibly messy over the last few weeks, and it stems back to this. And it is a strange thing, I think, to happen, because people will think back to how the Ulster Unionists fared in the most recent election, getting that representation back at Westminster, doing well enough in other constituencies. So I think there will be a lot of head scratching this morning going on, but I can tell you we understand that things are really not good at the top ranks within the party, and it sounds like it's going in the one direction today, which would be that Doug Beattie could very likely have announced by the end of the day that he is stepping down as leader.
He's a fighter, Jane. So there's the possibility that he might be making a statement coming out fighting, but that's not what you've been told by your sources, is that right?
That's correct. That is not what we are hearing at this moment in time. The other thing I would say as well is that the question mark is, if Doug Beattie does step down, who leads in his place? I think that this will make him the fifth former leader of the party who's still an MLA at Stormont. I think attention would turn to the likes of Robbie Butler, for example, who's the current deputy leader. I think these will all be things that people within the party will be talking about at the moment, and certainly some of them have been talking to me about. And we know that the party's conference is due at the end of September, the 28th of September. So if this unfolds today, as we're being led to believe that it will, then I think it's going to be a very busy week for the party as they try to rally and try and to sort something out to put somebody else in Doug Beattie's place.
Jane, thank you. Obviously, we'll follow Jane today and find out. She's got the story. We'll find out from Jane throughout the day here on Radio Ulster what's going on. Editor of the newsletter, Ben Laurie, with us today. Good morning to you, Ben.
Good morning, Stephen.
Well, it's very, very interesting and a little bit strange, Ben, is it not?
Yeah, well, I didn't have any inkling that this was going to happen. I mean, one thing that isn't a surprise in this is that the Ulster Unionist Party has, I wouldn't say that it's divided in where to go. I don't think so much as a clear division, but a bit like the FDLP, it has a great difficulty in knowing where to go. And there's no doubt that there are people who, within the party, who want to, who feel that a lot of the successes they had, a lot of the results that they got in the recent election in constituencies, in a number of places, including in East Antrim and Lygon Valley, where they really polled very, very strongly. And their overall vote, I mean, they got 60% of the DUP vote. That's three, for every five DUP votes, there were three UUP votes. And there are people in the party who think that the reason for that is that they've moved in a sort of decisively liberal way. And then there's a very significant part of the party that is more conservative, that's more rural, that's based all over Northern Ireland, that isn't, you might say, inclined towards a woke response to issues, and that wouldn't really want to go in that way. And as I said, it's not a clear division. It's not a bitter and visible division, but it's definitely a tension within the party.
John Tong, Professor of Politics, Liverpool University. How much of a political force is the Ulster Unionist Party in Northern Ireland, John?
Well, it's obviously operating in much reduced circumstances compared to its heyday, but there were signs of revival at the general election, winning a seat. Whether that was a Robin Swan vote rather than an Ulster Unionist Party vote, I think is a point that can be debated. But there were signs of revival under Doug Beattie, much needed. I mean, the UUP, if it does get a new leader, that'll be the sixth leader in the last 14 years. That's not exceptional within unionism. The DUP is on its fifth leader in the last 14 years. That's what unionism tends to do. It tends to change leaders rather than address fundamental problems. But it is, the timing is a surprise. Jane's already outlined the situation in terms of Colin Crawford. Woe betide any Ulster Unionist Party leader who tries to interfere in any way with the autonomy of local constituency associations. They don't like that. In many ways, the Ulster Unionist Party hasn't been a party at all. It's been 18 pretty autonomous constituency associations in which the writ of the leader doesn't really run that deep within the party. That's part of the problem. So it's a structural problem. There are also wider political issues. It's fairly well known that Doug Beattie was quite keen on the idea of the Ulster Unionist Party leading the opposition at Stormont rather than the SDLP. But he couldn't take his party with him on that. And so the Ulster Unionist Party remained in the executive. It wasn't that Doug Beattie was massively in favour of going into opposition, but it was his preference. He didn't get his way on that. So there are wider political forces here at work. If you can't get your way as leader, why would you remain as leader?
I remember when Doug Beattie was in trouble after the texts that he had sent out came to light. From when he was in the army, and he was in trouble. His job was under threat, and he walked into the studio and he sat down beside me, and he fought for his job, and actually his party and the public rallied round him because he was so open about what he had done. Do you expect that today? Do you expect a frank, open conversation, Ben, from him today as to what he's thinking and what has brought him to this? Would he really step down from the leadership of his party over a single selection process?
So the first thing is, he was right not to step down then, you could say, tactically, because that all blew over and was very quickly forgotten about. As to what he's intending to do, the short answer is that I don't know, because I have tried to phone him after what Jane was saying on Good Morning Ulster and haven't spoken to him yet and haven't been able to get senior people in the party yet. But he is a man who speaks candidly like that. He is a man who talks in very personal ways. He talks about being not only a new approach to politics, about wanting about being a different political leader. I mean, he's very much somebody who came into politics late in life, and he supports that. He was very behind bringing in his former military colleague, Colonel Tim Collins to stand in North Down. So yes, I would expect him to speak candidly. Of course, the most important thing is this statement going to reaffirm that he is standing down? And that is, from making soundings, the inkling that I'm getting, even though I haven't spoken to him or anybody in the party, senior elected representatives yet, about whether or not that's the case. But I understand that it looks like he will be going.
If it is about the selection of Colin Crawford, you had, it was actually John Tong in Ben's newspaper, the newsletter. If you go back to July, there was Councillor Daryl Wilson who said he has concerns. He's a long-serving Ballymoney councillor, and he had been overlooked in favour of a party colleague who was selected to represent Ballymena at Mid and Ulster, Mid and East Antrim Council for the first time last May. He said, I had put my name forward to be considered for the vacant MLA position in North Antrim, and it's with a heavy heart that I share the news of my unsuccessful bid. I'm awaiting feedback from the party regarding concerns and questions that I have surrounding the process. Do you get a sense here of how vulnerable a party leader is?
Yeah, a party leader cannot exert his authority over local constituency associations, particularly in the Ulster Unionist Party, where they like to choose their own candidates and they don't particularly like central interference. You can argue as well that Doug Beattie, in terms of bringing in Tim Collins, the episode that you just mentioned, that didn't work out very well at all for Doug Beattie. So there is rivalry between local constituency associations and party leaderships. You get that in all parties, but it's particularly true within the Ulster Unionist Party. I think the difficulty for the UUP is, where do they go from here if Doug Beattie does step down? Because, you know, more than half their MLAs have done the job. Tom Elliott, Mike Nesbitt, Robin Swan, Steve Aitken, and Doug Beattie himself. So that only leaves four, unless they're going to get a retread.
What about Robbie Butler?
Step down. Well, with Robbie Butler, he's the obvious choice as deputy leader. He is the obvious choice. They may well simply say, yeah, Robbie Butler is the man. John Stewart might have an outside chance. We only know it's going to be a man because I don't think they've got any women UUP MLAs. But yeah, I mean, Robbie Butler would be the logical successor if Doug Beattie does decide to step down. But the timing's extraordinary. Just as the Ulster Unionist Party re-enters the House of Commons, just as the party has its best election result in a number of years, the leader decides to step down over what is, in many ways, a pretty obscure debate over a local constituency selection process. That, to me, indicates there are wider forces at work here. It's not just about the constituency selection. There is that issue of the opposition and what to do at Stormont. But even so, I mean, it's an extraordinary decision to if Doug Beattie does step down, because, you know, I think he is, you know, clearly the obvious leader of the party at the moment. It's not a wash with obvious replacements.
John Tong, Ben Laurie, thank you very much indeed. Remember, we have not heard from Doug Beattie. This is not confirmed. Jim McCormick being very careful in her reporting today to say that that is what multiple sources are telling her Doug Beattie may do today, but we need to wait and hear from Mr. Beattie himself. Now, next on Nolan This Morning, criminal investigations understood to have been launched into the officers who some people would describe as joining in the celebrations of Armagh's All-Ireland GAA win. Other people would decide they were involved in careless driving. It's been described, the fact that there are now criminal investigations, as utter nonsense and political garbage by Alan McQuillan, who's a former Assistant Chief Constable. Why, Alan? Good morning. Why should process not be followed here?
Well, let's look at where we are, Stephen. We've had a succession of riots. We have immigrants in Northern Ireland being burned out of their shops, burned out of their premises, burned out of their homes, many of whom are people who work in the health services supporting us. We have PSNI, so much in its uppers, A, it's broke, and B, it's having to borrow police officers from Scotland. And our politicians, some of them, are not prepared to look at those issues, not prepared to address those issues, but are after a police officer for sticking a flag out of a car window. In terms of the realities of Northern
Ireland... Well, it's not the sticking of the flag, it's the driving, as you know.
Well, first of all, my understanding is three officers have been dealt with in relation to this. Secondly, it's the driving. I've seen the video, I'm sure you've seen the video, I saw no evidence of careless driving there. I saw no evidence of any danger to anyone. It is the sort of thing that would normally be dealt with by a quiet word from a supervisor, but it's certainly elevated to this investigation that, frankly, on past form, will grind on for months.
Well, let's remind ourselves what John Boucher, the chief constable, told the policing board about this.
My reaction to that footage is very straightforward, as you might expect. We are the police. And that privilege and responsibility demands that at all times we act professionally and independently. That did not happen on Sunday night in Camlow. I'm very alive to the polarised commentary which has taken place since the footage came to light, which demonstrates yet again that policing in Northern Ireland remains something of a lightning rod for society. I've had many, many phone calls in both condemnation and support of the officers' actions. Some have asked for the officers to be suspended or even sacked, whilst others have supported the officers and called for commendations for them. Let me be crystal clear. No one is being suspended, no one is being sacked, and no one is being relocated. However, nor do I support the officers of the actions of the officers.
So no one's being sacked, no one's being suspended, no one's being relocated. And yet when we ask the police today, well, why is there a criminal investigation? They're telling the BBC it would be inappropriate to comment. Mr. Boucher has already commented. The question is this proportionate? Does this, Alan, meet the smell test for the public about what the right thing is to do for those officers in the context with which they were doing it? And some people would say the police don't display very much discretion when they're investigating anybody else.
Well, the police do tend to display a lot of discretion, and I think I would agree with everything that John Boucher said in that meeting. The point is how you deal with these things. People do make mistakes. They do things that they shouldn't have, sometimes with the best of intentions. For example, you have John O'Dowd last week saying that that police officer with that flag did more for community relations than all the other efforts in the last 10 years. I mean, you know, this is a two-sided situation. We have two communities here, and we have some politicians who are always simply looking, in my view, for opportunities for offence. I think that this was would have been best dealt with by a quiet, quick word with the officer.
Well, quiet, quick word. I'm sure Jim Allister, leader of the TUV, given what he said about this, wouldn't agree. Tell us why, Mr. Allister. Good morning.
Well, this just goes down to a very simple question. Are police officers above the law? Those who impose the law on everyone else, should they be given a by-ball on the same law? And it seems very clear to me that the answer to that question is no, they shouldn't. And if there is evidence of careless driving, then a due process needs to be followed, and ultimately the PPS needs to take a decision upon whether or not to prosecute. If that's what would happen with you, Stephen, or with me, or with anyone else, so why not with a police officer? It's as simple as that.
Alan?
Well, that's actually not correct, because the vast majority of cases where police officers stop someone for a minor offence of careless driving, they will exercise their discretion, give them advice and send them on their way. Correct to say that.
Well, nor is it correct for Alan to say that there was no prima facie evidence in the videos of careless driving. You had a driver who was waving a flag out the window, who was doing a donuts on the road, who on one video I saw clearly inconvenienced another driver, and all that in a very crowded situation. But those are the matters that need to be investigated. Those are the matters for the PPS to reach a decision. But the fundamental here is that no one, least of all a former assistant chief constable, should be proclaiming that police officers should be above the law. They should. Once you do that, then they lose all independence, and policing is the sufferer, and policing loses all credibility. It's a matter of standing back from this objectively and saying, if I did that, if you did that, if an unknown citizen did that,
but Tim, are you
would
not
they a, be subject to the, are you the not a, implication are you, of the law?
Are you not aware of the police giving people warnings quite often that they don't when they're treating other people? They might pull someone over to the side of the road and tell them that, I don't know, they've been swerving over the road, they've cut up a lane, they've done whatever they've done, and look, don't do it again, we're giving you a warning. It's not a criminal matter, is it?
No, and a formal caution might be the ultimate outcome here.
No, but everybody hasn't given a formal...
That's a matter for the PPS to decide, but you cannot excuse what was seen by saying...
But whether it was seen or not, are you telling me, Jim, that people up and down this country will not be aware of situations where they've been pulled over and they've been told, look, you cut up that lane, you didn't put your indicator on, you didn't do whatever, on your way, don't do it again?
Yes, that happens.
So how come you don't support that happening with police officers that have a bulletproof vest on because they're endangering themselves for us?
Because police officers might be expected as the implementers of the law to know the law, to implement the law, to adhere to the law, and not to defy the law.
So what do you want? Do you want these guys sacked? Is that what you want?
No, let's be very clear. I want due process to take its course. I want the PPS to reach a decision whether or not there should be prosecutions here, and then I want the courts to adjudicate upon that. That's all I'm asking. But let's be very clear. When I go...
By the way, a file might not even go to the PPS.
Well, if it doesn't, there'll be questions to be asked and answered about that. But just to be very clear, when I go to the road traffic order and look up careless driving, driving without care and attention, it doesn't say this is a criminal offence provided you weren't celebrating the GAA. It says this is a criminal offence. So that's the fundamental here. And you cannot colour it. You cannot pretend that it gets a byball simply because of those circumstances. Because once you do that, then you open a terrible can of worms whereby every time the police then act against somebody, they will be said, why are you acting against me when you didn't act against yourself?
I just don't hear you, Jim, during, for example, bonfire session season, talking about the illegal dumping of wood on public property all the time. I don't hear you talking about the pure criminality associated with people setting fires throughout Northern Ireland.
Sorry, Stephen, if police officers were breaking the law at bonfires, I would be saying
I'm not
that.
Talking about police officers. I'm talking about members of the unionist community who grab bonfire wood. No, I'm talking about the strict... If you are someone that talks about the strict interpretation of the law, then how come every 12th of July, 11th of July and Boney Night, you're not calling for everybody that leaves wood at a bonfire site to be arrested and criminalised? You don't do it.
What would the criminal offences be, Stephen?
Setting fire on public property without proper insurance? You don't think that's a criminal offence?
You've talked yourself into a nonsense.
No, I haven't.
We're talking about those who implement the law. Police officers.
Doesn't matter. You want the law to apply to everyone equally.
I do, and I don't want police officers to be above the law, because once you put police officers above the law, you have no law.
All right, and so just to be clear, those people that are climbing up public lampposts and putting union flags on them without permission, is that a criminal offence? Is that a breach of a bylaw?
A bylaw is not a criminal offence, generally. You should know that.
Should they be prosecuted?
No matter.
Should anyone putting a union flag on a lamppost be prosecuted?
It is very clear that when a police officer drives,
you're not answering the question.
If he did, then he's breaking the law.
Let's answer the question.
I would be breaking the law.
Would you support those people putting union flags on public lampposts being prosecuted?
I support.
You're a Puritan.
I support anyone and everyone being prosecuted for breaking the law.
Does that include unionists putting union flags on lampposts? Yes or no?
Just as I am not deciding whether that driving was careless driving, to me,
I'm going to ask you the question one more time. For those unionists that put union flags on public lampposts, and if it's a breach of a bylaw, do you think they should be prosecuted?
If it's a breach of the bylaw, there's no such thing as a prosecution.
Do you think they should be punished?
You think that should be a criminal offence?
Do you think they should be punished?
And tell me what criminal offence you're
talking
about.
Do you think they should be punished? You're a Puritan for the law.
If you've not, you get punished for breaching the criminal law. You should go and read some criminal law, Stephen, and then you wouldn't be making such ridiculous points.
Alan McQuillan?
Well, it depends where the flag's flying. If you're standing there sticking flags up deliberately outside the local chapel, then it might be a public order offence. So, I mean, but I think the point is clear. Jim has made up his mind. He said he wants us investigated, put to the DPP, and then decided on by the court. In other words, the officer's already been convicted in his mind. He's headed for
court. He hasn't said that. He has not said that.
He said it should be decided by the DUP and the DPP, and then it should be adjudicated on by the court. The only circumstance...
Adjudicated is the key point. It should be adjudicated by the court, not by you, Alan. Not by me. By the court.
The point is, it should never go anywhere near the court, in my view. If it was any
it
other
should be above the law.
Anybody
you
else...
You want these officers to be above the law. Not
no,
to be,
I
not
want
to be
them to
be dealt
with fairly.
You want them not even to be investigated.
I want them dealt with fairly, proportionately, and reasonably.
You don't even want them investigated. You say it's ridiculous to investigate them.
What I have said is, well, you know, Jim, there are many, many people who are caught for motoring offences. And
yes,
the vast majority of them are dealt with by quiet words of advice.
And
for example,
PSNI well
even have a policy on speeding that says that a certain number of miles per hour over the speed limit, you get a warning. You're sent on a course for driver rehabilitation.
But you have extrapolated that
out
to the point of saying these officers should automatically be above the law. They should not.
No, I didn't say that at all.
Alan, does it not protect the perception and the principle of our police force being impartial if, even if it's one of their own, they are brought right through the proper process of investigation and that protects the integrity of the PSNI and their reputation?
The problem is the way that's applied. If you look at this, these three officers, I understand, have been removed from driving.
That's right, they have.
That's the first thing. The second thing is that this will drag on for months and months and months. And that, you know, those officers will be under a cloud with this for months and months and months, with the effect of that on them and their colleagues and their families. And the bottom line is simple. If we saw an officer doing something like this in the street, what they would normally happen was a supervisor would take him to one side and say, that's not acceptable, don't do that again. And that would have been an end to it. But we have political pressure here to elevate that. And why? Because it's the flag of Armagh won the All-Ireland. I mean, it's as I said at the time, it's garbage politics in Northern Ireland. We're ignoring the rioting, we're ignoring the people being forced out of their homes, we're ignoring the state the police service has been allowed to descend into, where it's 25% below its strength, and we focus on little bits things like this.
Sorry, Stephen, if the police are decreed to be above the law, then that's garbage policing. Never mind anything else. The police cannot, as of right, be decreed to be above the law and not even subject to investigation. There must be an investigation, there must be due process, and there must be...
Why would you not be happy with an investigation internally and Boucher making, the Chief Constable making the decision?
There's two dimensions to this, Stephen. There's the disciplinary matter of whether or not they followed their own code of ethics of independence and non-partisanship.
That's what this is about, isn't it?
And there also is the separate matter of was the criminal law broken. And those are two separate distinct issues, one to be decided internally, the other to be decided ultimately by the PPS. And that's the way it should be.
Are you surprised, Jim? I apologise. Let me ask you this one final question, Jim. There are 4,000 people in Londonderry, whatever you want to call it. Sorry, Camlock in South Armagh. Camlock in South Armagh, my apologies, who have signed a petition calling for those officers, in support of those officers. Are you surprised? Like, imagine that a few years ago. South Armagh, 4,000 people signing support for the police.
I think de facto they're signing support for the police because they were supporting the GAA, a GAA which I'm talking to you from the town of Ballymena, where a man who burnt a young mother to death is honoured in the GAA by having a trophy called after him. That's why the GAA evokes discontent among some.
Jim Alistair, thank you. Alan McQuillan, before you go this morning. In fact, let's take the news. We'll be back in just a second. Lots of reaction today to this story that the officers involved in the... it is pejorative to say that they were involved in the GAA celebrations, because other people are suggesting that they were involved in activity that may have broken the law. So it depends on your perspective, doesn't it, as to what way you look upon this. 030 30 80 55 55. Alan McQuillan, you're a former Assistant Chief Constable. Is there a risk to the PSNI here that the rank and file feel that if they make a mistake, that they're not going to be protected? Those split-second judgments that the police need to make every day? Or actually, this was very visible, should they have known better, and they deserve what they get?
Well, hopefully not with this new Chief Constable. I think...
Well, he signed off at going for a criminal investigation, hasn't he?
Well, it may not be, because it would normally be dealt with by those below him. So, but again, the issue may well be that the complaint has been made to the Ombudsman, and the Ombudsman has asked the police to investigate. That's what they would normally do in matters that are considered.
It's my understanding that the Ombudsman has sent it back to the PSNI saying, this is one for you.
Yeah, absolutely. In other words, they consider it trivial, and they don't want to get involved in it. So in those circumstances, that's what would be done. But, for example, my understanding is that the well-rehearsed issues around the Armour Road, that's still grinding on through the courts, 3 years later? And you know, the question is, can our officers have confidence that they'll be dealt with, but they'll be dealt with fairly? And that's the issue. And listen to what Jim has said there. Yes, there's potentially criminal offences.
Well, then, if there are potentially criminal offences, then why is that not being investigated? Why shouldn't it be?
Because very often, not all criminal offences need to be investigated. The issue is very simple. What is the right and proportionate way to do that? If you take the view that every case needs to be investigated, then you know, motoring will grind to a halt because the courts will be swamped with people who should never be in front of them, because a word of advice would be sufficient. And that applies to police officers as well. And I think the vast majority of reasonable people in this society will be looking at what happened, will be looking at the context, and will be looking at it with what everything else that's going on at the moment and saying, this is not a priority for us, this shouldn't happen.
Alan McQuillan, thank you. John in the Falls. Morning, John.
Hello, Stephen. I just wanted to make a point. I'm not trying to say I'm right or I'm wrong or anything whatsoever, but as I say, see the policemen that done what they've done in supporting Armagh. It was probably worth £1 million advertising for any police force that wanted to promote inclusiveness in the police force. It was like the fella that found the blue lobster. The word was in shock. No one knew a blue lobster existed. It's like hen's teeth, you can't find them. But we accept, yes, probably the majority of the police force supporting them, like Crusaders, Glen Thorne, probably support rugby and stuff like that, wouldn't contemplate getting near the GAA. But when the Catholic community, I'm not talking Republican, I'm not talking nationalists, I'm talking Catholic community, seeing that them policemen showed a bit of support, but we're all in shock. It was like finding the blue lobster, it was like finding the hen's teeth. And I don't think he's a criminal for what he done. I think he's just done the PSNI proud. As I say, I'm not saying I'm right. I could be wrong. I'm wrong in some people's eyes. But I don't think he's a criminal. I don't think he should be put on sick leave. I don't think he should be put on garden leave. And
well, he hasn't been. So you've got this slight contradiction that the Chief Constable, John Boucher, and maybe rightly so, who knows? But it could be interpreted as, before the outcome of a criminal investigation, John Boucher has said there will be no suspension. These officers will not be relocated. These officers will not be fined. Will not be suspended. Sorry. And that's before the criminal investigation that he is then supporting going in to his officers. So how can he have it both ways? He is signing off a criminal investigation into his officers and at the same time protecting them from any serious sanction.
Stephen, John Boucher is working with a bulletproof vest. He's trying to protect himself from the politicians. See, if this was in England, he wouldn't be getting the pressure that he's under. And I'm not saying that I'm supporting John Boucher in any way whatsoever. Yeah. What I'm saying is...
And he said the officers did not... He said he didn't support the behaviour of the officers.
He should be above politics. And basically, Stephen, this is what this is coming down to. This is coming down to politics.
So Manny McCauley reporting this morning.
Stephen, he tried to talk you around by saying it wasn't this, it wasn't that. And he tried to put the barrister's voice on and the barrister's knowledge on.
But listen, I will not back down from the question I was asking this morning in terms of those unionists that go out on the 11th of July, the 11th of July, they set their bonies on fire. Some of those bone fires, certainly in the past, have been right beside houses to the extent where the fire brigade are out dousing those houses in water to try to stop them being set alight. How's that not arson? So there are people inside those houses. The houses are on fire. How's that not arson? Where do we hear these unionist politicians standing up and asking for the purity of the law to be pursued? It doesn't happen.
Stephen, this place is mad. It's nothing like England, Scotland, Wales or the rest of the world.
Well, it's mad enough in England, Scotland and England, isn't it?
I'm not condemning bonfires whatsoever. If people want to have them in their area. But the world is trying to be a cleaner place, and in bonfires, you don't have a cleaner place with bonfires. You have danger, you have annoyance, you have disruption. The state of the streets is an absolute disgrace. Hopefully and thankfully, thank God, we've eradicated them in the nationalist and the Republican Catholic community. We've eradicated most of them. Yes, they happen down and die. I would love to see them all away. All away, Stephen. But the bottom line is, John Boucher is operating with a bulletproof vest on because he's getting punched here and he's getting punched there, left, right and centre. He's an Englishman. He should be above all this.
Well, one of the points he has made, and he did so at the policing board, is that no matter who was phoning him from all of the different political persuasions, it would not affect his decision-making around this. Mandy McCauley reporting this morning that that officer who was doing the driving, Jim Alistair describing it as donuts. Other people might not see it like that. But Mandy reporting this morning that the two other officers that were in the car, that they're now under criminal investigation for turning the blue lights on and a siren for a few seconds. So Stephen, does that feel right to you, Derek in Kilkeel? Good morning, Derek.
Good morning, Stephen. I'm a wee bit more than a wee bit disappointed in the way you cruel over Jim Alistair. It was on about the police, them two police officer and the driving, and then you went on tore him apart about bone fires and anything to do with...
I think he might argue he tore me apart.
No, he didn't. The man is a qualified barrister as far as I know, and he knows the law. But the point is with the police officers, if they had wanted to celebrate the GAA winning the McGuire Cup, that was up to them. After they came off duty, they could put on the GAA uniform and run up and down the whole of Ireland and celebrate.
Well, what they were trying to do, Derek, while they're in uniform, they must remain impartial, and that's a very strong argument. What they were trying to do, Derek, was they were trying to connect with the local community who were celebrating a sporting win.
Second part of me, what I'm asked to speak on. The two young police officers, the time of the COVID-19 epidemic, they went to a crowd, I think was Sean McGuire's bookmakers on the Armour Road, because there was a group.
Sean Graham's you're talking about. But what's the point, Derek? Try to cut to the point for me, please.
The point is, they got recommended for doing their job. And I think these police officers, if there was three in the car, that even makes it worse, because some one of them should have said, no, wise up.
I think the other two were in another car. Derek, thank you. Morning. Brian, morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Go ahead, Brian.
Constable should have dealt with this behind closed doors. All down the years, I remember, I'm 74 now, and every time the nationalists were criticised, condemned for not showing any favour to the police. There's an instance of happened about that Armagh flag. Fantastic. The people I talked to thought it was fantastic. And there's been the police officers have been criticised for it.
Well, they're under criminal investigation for it. Now,
which is worse, I'm going to say that. But Stephen, you remember soon after, the day after, Rose, what happened? It's just politicians. I blame the politicians for all this.
But Brian,
the DUP, hold on a second. The DUP went with a deputation to the headquarters to complain about this incident. They didn't go to the police headquarters when the rats happened here. They didn't send a deputation there. Well, Stephen, this is all to do.
Well, they were calling out the violence.
Well, this, I know what I mean. They made sure they didn't go. Well, they didn't send a deputation to the headquarters. And Jim Allister comes on the programme. I know what he's going to say before he even comes on the show. I know what he's going to. He dislikes anything to do with Irish culture. And you know that? Everybody
well, he would
knows
deny that, wouldn't he?
He is
a barrister. He is looking at the legislation and he is calling for an investigation. Can I just say this also? That I understand that as part of the police process, this goes to their investigation unit. But that does not mean that a file will be ultimately sent to the PPS. This is part of their process.
Mr. McQuillan used the word trivial, Stephen, and it is trivial. Let's be honest about it. It's trivial. This action had been taken on by the police constable behind closed doors, in a sense.
It couldn't be behind closed doors.
I'm only giving
the video was all over social media.
Well, Stephen, what do the unions, certain unions, want? Did they want to wrap? Did they want a rat that day of the police officers flying out? I mentioned this on the programme before, Stephen. What would have happened if the police officers had threw the flag out of the window? No, no. What do unionists want? What does Jim Allister want? I can't understand. The caller bringing up about the Graham's Boogies. Stick to the one subject, for God's sake. You know? I mean, there's another thing that you mentioned about the 4,000 signatures from down at Camelot. Tim Allister didn't pass any comments about that. He didn't say, well, it was good.
Okay.
I never heard that. And I think about that there was fantastic.
Brian, thank you very much. Morning, sir. Thank you. 10 to 10, 0-30-30-80. 55-55. Now, James has contacted us this morning. It's not his real name. Visited his grandparents' grave in Roselawn. Morning to you.
Morning, Stephen.
What's the problem?
I attended my grandparents' grave on Sunday, and when I went up and seen the absolute state of Roselawn, in that it was unkept grass, and the grass that they did cut, they left the cuttings there, and the weeds between the headstones, or the height of the headstones, it's just really very disrespectful. When I looked at right across the graveyard, it was the exact same story. As you know, Roselawn operates a one-way system to get back out of it again, and it's right across the board. The whole site.
Tell me what it looks like.
Disgrace. To be honest with you, Stephen, when I described it to other people, it looked as if it had been left for years. It hadn't been kept at all. Now, my grandparents have been in that grave for 30, 40 years, and over the time, there has been a number of changes in terms of they've taken out paths, they've put in stone paths, they've taken out paths. You know, it's always been changes, but never been in a positive way, and nothing's been said. But what I witnessed on Saturday, the place is an absolute sight. The management of the cemetery should hang their heads in shame if they think that it's respectable to leave gravesides in that state is an absolute disgrace. Now, subsequently to that, I had been speaking to friends and stuff about the subject, and they had mentioned that their loved ones' graves, that their headstones had sunken, and the council was going to sort of fix it. And they've been waiting a year and a half for those things to be done, and they're still not done. So it's, you know, I think they really need to look at that side at Roselong and really start to ask questions.
It's interesting. I must get up, either myself or one of the team, we must get up and take a photograph of it, and we'll put it out on my Twitter feed today, at Stephen Nolan. What's interesting about this is there's been an immediate response from Belfast City Council apologising for what they admit to be the, quote, unsatisfactory condition of some areas in Roselawn Cemetery.
Yeah.
And they are saying they will take immediate steps to ensure that the cemetery staff maintain these areas to a satisfactory standard in future. So that just begs the question, why was it allowed to get like this? What has happened?
You've highlighted that, and I agree. I mean, but there's a Belfast Telegraph article from the 14th or 15th of July highlighting, and the headline was "Some Graves." Well, first of all, it's not some graves, it's all graves. And secondly, that was the 14th or 15th of July. We're now on the 20th of August, or nearly the 20th of August, and I'm kind of saying, has something been done?
Is it still like that?
Yeah, it's not.
When were you up there last?
I was up there on Saturday.
And it's still like that? So they've known for a month?
No, but this is what I'm trying to say, Stephen. Have they done something? And this is what I'm saying is better than what it was, or haven't just done anything. But whatever way you look at it, it's an absolute disgrace. They should hang their heads in shame. Totally disrespecting the people that's in the ground, and just disrespecting the people who visit, and disrespecting the ratepayers of Belfast City Council. End of.
When you pay your fees to bury someone in Roselawn, when you pay your rates for a facility like that to exist, that's your contract with the council, that they will keep that site in a tidy manner.
Yeah.
So it comes back to my question, what is going on? Why have they allowed it to get like that?
Yeah. But do you know what, Stephen? I would say if you were to take a percentage of the people who have loved ones up in Roselawn and got their feedback, I dread to think the stories that you would get back. I would dread. I've heard other stories. And you think, these people just don't care. And it's down to basic respect for those who have passed and their families and continue to, you know, they're entrusted to look after these graves and legacies or whatever else of the people that are in there, and they're just not doing it, and they can't bring it back down to money, because no, what I saw on Saturday is just down to basic respect and using the lawn more properly and taking weeds out of in between headstones.
How high was the grass?
Well, the grass was haphazardly cut, so bits of it were cut and some bits of it weren't.
What?
Yeah, exactly. You might as well have given a lawnmower to a 5-year-old and let them loose, going up and down a row, and they've left bits and they've left the grass. It just looks unkept. A child could have done a better job. And that's no disrespect to the workers.
Now, here's also Unionist Party Councillor Jim Rogers with us this morning. What on earth is going on, Jim?
Good morning, Stephen. Stephen, Roselawn is a massive site. I'm a regular visitor there, unfortunately, going to various funerals. But we have had difficulties with some of the land. But your caller, I will give him an assurance that I will speak to our staff later today to see what we can do. It's not easy maintaining a cemetery.
Well,
and there's good parts of the cemetery. And there's unsatisfactory.
What's the difficulties? What would the difficulty be, Jim, of cutting the grass?
Well, there shouldn't be any difficulty. And that's why I'm given assurance today as the chair of the cemeteries and crematorium working group.
Oh, you're the chair?
Yes. We have a working group which has one member from each of the 8 parties in Belfast City Council.
But there's no working gym when you think about it.
Every number of months. And I will make sure that action is taken. It's not easy maintaining a cemetery. Make no mistake about that. And I'm not trying to find an excuse or excuses.
Have you seen the state of it? You say you're up there often. Have you seen the state of it?
Yes, and I've spoken to the staff about it. Some parts of it is in great order, others are not. And it's all to do with the type of land that we have there. A lot of the land we've had sinking, unfortunately, doesn't make it easy for the staff. But the staff are very hardworking. They do their best. And I can understand where the gentleman who's speaking to you in the last few minutes, how he feels.
How serious, Jim, is the sinking that you refer to?
Well, it's not terribly serious, but as you can appreciate, a site like that where there's a lot of dampness, water and slopes, you'll always have a All problem right. like that. But council will do their level best. We have a number of cemeteries. We're planning to build a new crematorium over the next few years. But I will make sure that action is taken and that there's immediate improvements on the site.
Well, Jim, look, while you're on, I've got to ask you about your leader, Doug Beattie. Have you any heads up as to whether he is to step down today or announce his resignation?
Stephen, it wouldn't be right or proper for me to make any comment whatsoever. And you can push me all you like, but I have no intention of saying anything.
Okay, so look, and I respect that, but do you know what's happening? You're not going to tell us, but do you know what's happening?
I'm not prepared to discuss the matter whatsoever. That's between myself and the party and others.
Okay, and does Doug Beattie have your support?
He's our party leader, and I always attempt to support the leader, and I have supported him, and that's where it sits.
Will he be the leader tomorrow morning?
Well, I don't know. Sometimes the press and the media know more than members of a political party, but I was unaware of until what I heard this morning.
And do you think he should stay on, Jim?
I'm not getting into that. I'm loyal to people. I'm loyal to our leader. And if people
Well, are you
want
loyal
to
the extent you think he should stay on or not? Obviously, he'll make the decision himself, but do you think he should stay on?
Well, it's entirely up to Doug.
Of course it's up to him, but do you think he should stay on?
Look, I'm not prepared to get into any discussion about it whatsoever, Stephen. You can push me all you like.
Okay.
I was invited on to talk about
Absolutely.
Rose Lawn Cemetery.
That's fair.
And I'm not prepared to go down the road
That's
of
fair.
The party leader.
That's fair. Jim, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it. James, thanks for bringing us the story about Rose Lawn. Already reported in the Belfast Telegraph, you're telling us. We'll try to get pictures of the current state of it and understand further what's going on. The news at 10 o'clock is coming up right now. Good morning, everyone. So, the Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, in Northern Ireland right now. Our political reporter, Brendan Hughes, is with us this morning. Why is he here, Brendan?
Well, good morning, Stephen. This is the second visit of Sir Keir Starmer to Northern Ireland since he became Prime Minister back in July. It's, of course, 3 weeks since that wave of street violence began across England and Northern Ireland. So I really think that this is going to be the focus of his visit to Northern Ireland today. We're expecting that he's going to be meeting with some of the rank-and-file PS&I officers who have been directly involved in responding to the street violence that we've seen in Belfast over recent weeks. Of course, that street violence has now died down, but the Prime Minister has been continuing this focus on policing and justice, and really whenever he's been speaking to the press and doing various visits in England and in GB, he really has been focusing on this idea of cracking down and clamping down on that street violence and disorder and trying to nip it in the bud, really. So I suppose that will be the focus of his visit here today. He's going to be briefed by the Chief Constable, John Bouch. This will be their second in-person engagement since Sir Keir Starmer entered number 10. And no doubt he's going to be hearing about the particular policing challenges in Northern Ireland that perhaps forces in England and Scotland and Wales wouldn't have to deal with. And during the visit, we're also expecting that he's going to be undertaking a number of private engagements with community services that would be involved in supporting families and vulnerable people. But that really seems to be the summing up of what he's going to be doing here today, but with a big focus on policing and what the response has been to the recent street violence and disorder in Northern Ireland.
And obviously, he will be wanting photo opportunities of him being on the ground in Northern Ireland with the police. And obviously, the Chief Constable, John Boucher, has a game to play in that he's got to be seen to be welcoming a Prime Minister, and he's got to be seen to play the game. The political reality is that's the same Chief Constable that is saying that there is not enough money for policing here in Northern Ireland. So whatever Sir Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, wants the focus to be today, is it possibly going to be he flew into Northern Ireland, didn't get his chequebook out, didn't promise more money for the PSNI and flew back out again?
Well, I think definitely there will be questions around that, because the Prime Minister has made a clear focus of the past number of weeks following that disorder that broke out across England and Wales on the policing and justice picture. He has obviously talked up his credentials as a former chief prosecutor, and I presume that whenever he is speaking today, he's going to be referring to his former role as a human rights advisor within the Northern Ireland Policing Board, saying that really he gets what has been going on in Northern Ireland and that he wants to do whatever he can to try and support what's going on here. But there will be those questions over the wider funding issue for the PSNI, as well as the recruitment and staffing issues for the PSNI as well, because as we know, officer numbers within the PSNI have been at record lows for more than a year now. The PSNI is sitting at about 6,300 officers, and last week, it was even only last week, that 80 officers from Police Scotland had to arrive in Northern Ireland to help support PSNI duties, with the fear that that violence and disorder was going to continue in Northern Ireland. Thankfully, we haven't seen that happen, but clearly that shows the pressures that the PSNI has been under, and I'm sure that whenever the Chief Constable gets a private word with the Prime Minister over all of this, I'm sure that he'll be bending his ear about many of the challenges that particularly the PSNI faces.
It's also, though, Brendan, what the PSNI is going to say publicly about this after the visit is completed today. You could write the questions into the press office right now. What did Boucher ask him about funding? What did the Prime Minister, how did the Prime Minister respond? Does Boucher agree with Hilary Benn, the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland, that there will be no more money and it's up to Stormont to cut the cake? Those are the questions.
Well, absolutely. I think that the Prime Minister will be asked about what, if any, further support the UK government can give to the Northern Ireland Executive to meet some of the challenges it's facing. We have our politicians and ministers here who have been saying in their various departments that they really are finding it difficult to have money to do the various different public services that they want to provide for people. We have the Justice Minister, Naomi Long, has been saying really since last week that she is going to be asking for more money to try and support the PSNI, having asked for officers from Police Scotland. That will, of course, incur an additional cost that the PSNI is facing. So really, there will be questions for the UK government if there is that support for Northern Ireland and a recognition of the particular challenges within Northern Ireland, that whether the UK government is going to provide some sort of financial support to help with that.
Okay, Brendan, thank you very much indeed. Good morning to you. 03030 80 55 55. Back to Roselawn Cemetery. Margaret, good morning, Margaret.
Good morning,
Belfast
Stephen.
City Council unconditionally apologising for the state of Roselawn Cemetery. But what you're about to bring us today, this isn't the first time that they've known about this.
No, I'm delighted that guy has flagged this up, because I have actually phoned the maintenance guy, Mr. Blair, twice, Stephen, over, now not just yesterday, over this last 3 years. My mum and dad are not in the
Well, obviously that gentleman isn't on here to defend himself. So let's talk more generally. Nor may he be responsible for the facilities, the resources that the cemetery are giving him. So let's just talk about, not Mr. Blair, but about what you've seen. What states have been in?
My mum and dad are cremated. They are in the under the trees, facing the crematorium. That's where my mum and dad and my brother are buried. And my dad's dead 31 years. Now, 31 years ago, it was very nice. It was well kept. But when you go in under the trees, now no doubt when you get your film crew out, because this has been aired, they will be out working like beavers. But believe you
me... Well, they need to be quick, because I'm going to go up at 10:30.
Well, I'm glad, because I'm telling you, I am so pleased that this has been flagged up on the radio, because I don't go that often. I only go certain times a year. But every time I go, it's getting worse and worse. You can't even find your path down into it.
Well, that's...
It is horrendous, and the state of it is unbelievable. And it's hard enough going to the graveyard. You don't need to go to remember people. But when you drive into Roselawn, it is immaculate at the front. But when you go and you go under the trees, let me tell you, it's another story. Definitely. So I'm really pleased.
That must hurt a lot.
It does.
When you see the disrespect, and that's what it is if it's being overgrown to the extent where it's hurting families who are grieving. It's just disrespectful, isn't it?
It's not that it's even overgrown. It's really treacherous. Because if you go up, you'll see what I mean. The branches have fallen off the trees and they're all scattered. And you can't even find the path. Honestly, it is. I know they can't help the leaves falling. But when I look at the crematoriums in America, the way they're so well kept, and
Absolutely.
Oh my goodness.
That's right, the graveyards
immaculate,
are. They are.
Immaculate, but here it's a different story. A different story.
Why?
Now,
I
don't know. I don't know.
Like Jim Rogers, who's chair of whatever the committee is that oversees it, was telling us this morning there's problems with the land sinking, but he couldn't. Jim was apologising too, and he said he can't give an explanation for why they haven't cut it back properly. Like, why wouldn't they do that?
I don't know. I really don't know. I'm just an ordinary woman. I have never had the nerve to go on the radio before. Never. But it has galled me over the years, and I never had the confidence to... I used to say I'm going to ring Stephen Nolan about this and flag this up, but I never, ever have had the confidence. But this morning when I heard that guy, I just thought, well, I'm going to ring.
Well, listen, thank you for doing so, and we're on it, right? And we're going to hold them accountable for what they're doing. And Margaret, thank you for talking to us today.
There's no problem. Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye. Now, next a warning about a scam involving Bitcoin. Paul thought that he got a great opportunity to save up money and to invest money so that he could pay for his mum's operation. But unfortunately, he's been ripped off. He's been completely scammed. Here's his story.
Basically, I have this friend on Instagram, and all of a sudden he starts posting up pictures of him investing in Bitcoin, calling it his Bitcoin journey. And I've known this friend for like 14, 15 years now. So I had no reason to doubt anything what he was posting. So I contacted him. I said, what's this? Oh, he says, oh, no, you know, just it's an incredible journey I'm going on now. Like, I've got this trading investor. You should contact her. And he gave me the name of the trading investor, the trading manager. And I contacted her. And she took me through everything of what it was all about, how you invest with us. And we will crypto mine the Bitcoin to turn your hundreds into thousands. And so then after that, they basically just said that we will take about 5 to 10% of the profits for us doing this for you. And
So for me to get my head around this even so far, so you had a friend who you'd known for over 10 years. Mm-hmm. On his Facebook site, he's advertising this Bitcoin journey, as he described it. So that gives you a degree of confidence because you know this guy. Mm-hmm. You follow through on the ad, and now you're talking to someone who will mine Bitcoin. What's that mean? Mine Bitcoin?
Stephen, honestly don't know what exactly they do. I can only guess that they watch the stock markets or something. They will see what's valuable and invest Bitcoin in it for me, and then return the profit on the investments. I had to look up crypto mining to see first if it was legal in the UK. It said it was. So I stupidly took a chance looking back on it.
How much did you invest?
I invested £9,000, Stephen.
You sent a stranger who you don't know £9,000?
I did that because I trusted my friend. It was him who got me in touch.
What happened next?
Well, basically, you promised the more you invest, the more you return the profit, basically. So I invested 1,000. They said that you have to get a platinum membership for this trading website that we have, which was £3,000. And I was like, what the hell, you know? So I went back to my friend. He just said, no, you have to do that. You know, that's just the way it goes.
So now you're up to £13,000 then?
No. This is the way it all started. This is how the £9,000 came by.
Okay.
Yeah. Stephen, just before I go any further, I just want to let you know there was a motivation for me doing this, and that was because I wanted to help my mother.
Okay.
Because my mother needed surgery to replace one of her joints, and I wanted to help her because I thought that if I got a return on the investment, I could get her in private. So that's what the motivation was before I went any further. So I took out a loan then for £3,000 on the advice of my friend. And they then came back and later that night and told me that there was a withdrawal fee of £7,800. So naturally at this point I was livid. I went back to the trading manager, and I was like, you know, what, WTF, basically, as well as my friend. And the trading manager, they're very clever in the way they do this, the way they manipulate you, basically. She has this Instagram page, and she posts up a lot of videos of people calling her by name, praising her, thank them for changing their life. Thank you so much for this. Like, this is going to solve a lot of problems for me. And she's even been verified by Instagram as legit and real. To further help me, she said, okay, I will help you. I will put in about £3,000 of that of my own money to help you, and you get the rest. So after about 10 days of back and forth and seeing my mother just have an episode where she was in pain, I went ahead and took the leap, and I took out another two loans to help make up £5,000, and I put that in. And so they said, okay, that's it. So you can withdraw the profits now, but you need to contact a senior trading officer just to get that, and he'll tell you how to withdraw the profits. And so they got me in touch. They gave me a number, and I contacted him or her, whoever it was. And then they once it was all done, they told me to download a Coinbase app, which is I think it's an app like for storing cryptocurrency, and give me the details, and I withdrew the money. And the money was about £55,000 worth in Bitcoin, which I don't know how that happened, but they said that's because of the money that you already invested.
So they were telling you that. How much had you invested in total by then?
£9,000 of my own money.
So they were telling you that they were such brilliant investors, you'd made the right decision, that £9,000 was now worth £50,000.
Mm-hmm. And so it was lying in the Coinbase wallet. And so I said, okay, what next? The senior trading officer said then that there's a fee now to process that money for you, which is £12,855.
£12,000?
Mm-hmm. So by this point, I knew then, I said to myself, oh God, this is a scam. Oh my God. The night that happened, what else can I describe it? I was very suicidal. I was very depressed, ashamed, realizing what I'd just done. The next day...
What you were trying to do, Paul, was help your sick mom. That's what you were trying to do.
Oh, God, well...
So do not...
People can say that, but I've still got myself into quite a mess, though. And the next day I discovered, because I was talking to another friend, I've only confided in a very few people about what's happened to me. And the friend that I was talking to, who I told her about what the other friend had done, the one about Coin, and she said, "Oh my God, no, that's not him." And I was like, "What? That's not him. You know, he's been hacked." And she showed me screenshots then of the conversation that she had with him, where he sent the exact same message to her about a Bitcoin journey, word for word. And now his Instagram profile is now gone. But on his Instagram profile...
But I thought you said you'd spoken to him and he had said he was going on that journey. Did you mean you'd messaged him and he'd messaged you back and that was a hacker or what?
It turns out it was a hacker, yes. But you see, me and him have, you know, we have always spoken on social media, never over the never over the phone.
Okay. My goodness.
And this hacker had access to all of our previous conversations. It was all there. That's why I didn't doubt. And so the next day I went to the police. I had to go to the doctors to get medication, to calm me down. I contacted the banks and, you know, that was 2 weeks ago now. And right now I've been told by both the banks and Revolut, which is where I transferred the money into Bitcoin, they're all telling me I have an open, they're not going to help me, basically. That trading manager, I have reported her to Instagram, telling them that she is a con artist, whoever it is, on this page. And they have not taken any action at all. They're keeping up there. And she's probably there doing it to someone else. Like I say, Stephen, my motivation was, because I was telling the scammers, I was saying that whenever they told me the money was going through today, I said, okay, I'd look forward to tell my mother tomorrow that I'm paying for her operation, take her in privately. And, they took all that information, Stephen. They didn't care. They've now got my money. They're now enjoying it. And the PSNI, they managed to track the money to somewhere in America.
So what are they going to do about it?
They pass it on to another team, Stephen, but to be honest with you, Stephen, I don't think I've got a snowflake's hope in hell of getting that money back.
Did you sent the money via Revolut, is that right?
Yeah, on Revolut, if anybody who has a Revolut account, they'll know that there is a button there that is for Bitcoin and where you can transfer your money to Bitcoin. So the trader gave me a Bitcoin address, one of their own Bitcoin addresses, and told me just to send it in there. And then there was a trading website then that they set up an account with. They pretty much said, this is where you can see your profits grow. And they were very professional, Stephen. They were very good at what they did and very good at manipulating. I was just one of the unfortunate ones that fell for it. And anybody who is listening, who's probably thinking that I got myself into this, they're right. No one is kicking me down harder than myself. I couldn't believe I was so stupid. So
you're $9,000 down now. How much?
Well, with the interest, we have counted it up. It was $2,000 of my own money, and then $7,000 in loans. So I'm $2,000 down on my own money. The loans with the interest is $10,500. Now, a sibling is the other person that I have confided with. None of my family know. If my mother or father knew about this, with everything that's happened this year with them, they would be, it wouldn't be good for them. So, like I say, everyone's been sworn to secrecy. That's why I'm going, I'm not letting many people know. But so it's my sibling had to give me £1,500 just to keep me afloat for this month, to which I'm very grateful. And, it actually has. So on top of that, I'd say it's about $14,000 or so. And
you're going to have to make sure, if you're wanting to keep this away from your mum and dad, that they're not listening to the radio or they'll recognise your voice.
Oh, no, don't worry. They don't listen to the radio that much.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how much to most people, that's a huge amount of money. To relatively few people, it's not going to hurt them that much. How much is $14,000 to you?
Well, that's more than what I earn in a year, Stephen.
Right. Well, that's...
Yeah. Yes, I am. I was going to say, I'm really, really bad at the minute. So, but I am trying my best just to hold it together, Stephen, So, but it was a stupid thing. my goal here in contacting you, Stephen, is just to get on and warn people. Just, you know, these people are professionals. They can get to, you know, certain people. They hacked my friend's account. Nobody has heard of him since, and but I'm sure he's okay. He's always a very quiet person anyway. And they will manipulate you. They will trick you. They'll con you into thinking that you're making a good payday and that, you know, everything here, like, you will be okay. You know, this will, you know, this will, you know, give you a good investment to take you for a while. So naturally, obviously, I thought that, okay, yes, and I could help my mother. And, you know,
so what, where is she with her operation at the minute? You've no money to buy her one, and she's on a waiting list. Is that it, or where is she?
She is on a waiting list, Stephen, and she, see, we got one operation done. She had to get two. She got one operation done. Now she's got to get the other one done. And she has been in pain like these last few years, but we decided to do something about this year. It was just for the rest of the money, which we're struggling to get right now, that we were going to do it for. So she could be waiting another 2 or 3 years for the NHS. But it was just, you know, once we saw, you know, the improvement that the first one did for her, we kind of wanted to get it completed as soon as possible. And so I thought that, you know, I didn't go looking for it, Stephen, you know. I didn't. It just came by me. He just started posting up pictures, and I unfortunately bought it, you know.
Are you okay?
Am I okay? How can I... Very embarrassed, ashamed, but I'm also bitter, you know. I just don't know how I'm going to get out of this, Stephen, though. I'm trying to think of ways, because I've called fraud office, I've called you know, wealth recovery, and it all just kind of seems a bit hopeless now. So
when did this happen?
Well, when I went to the police, we went back, and the first date I got in contact was the 6th of July.
I don't know when they became registered. Obviously, I can find out. But the Financial Standards Agency, Revolut is now a registered bank in the UK.
Yes.
They've got registration. With that comes responsibility. I don't know how responsible they are or not. I don't know the timing. But there are regulators that hold some of these. I wonder, should you contact one of the regulators?
Oh, Stephen, the thing is, Revolut, whenever they're doing that, okay, they'll have on it, they'll just say, be prepared to lose your money, like, you know, on the investments, you know. And they did give warnings on potential scams, but I thought it was just kind of routine checks, just be careful. So basically, they can say that they put up those warnings, and therefore they're not liable.
Maybe you should test that with the regulator. I don't know.
I don't know, Stephen. But like I say, it's a very tough financial situation to be in right now. I am trying to hold it together. I'm doing okay, but I am still on the lookout for the right people to help me, which I'm hoping that I will. But like I say, my reason for getting in touch with you was just to, when something like this happens, like, I think it's just best to warn the public, just warn them the dangers of Bitcoin, okay? It can be a lucrative investment with the right people, but there are so many wrong people out there that will con you.
Paul, thank you so much. And look, I'm feeling for you. And let's hope that there's someone listening somewhere that can provide you with advice or to try to get this back. And I really do feel for you, sir.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Well, Detective Chief Superintendent Gerald Pollock from the PSNI said, no matter how the promise of a high financial return is presented, the aim for criminals is always the same, to get you to invest more or for longer. Not only is there the financial loss and impact, but there's also the emotional distress. Criminals involved in many of these crimes, says Mr. Pollock, transfer funds from victims over a long period of time. And the money's transferred overseas, and it makes it difficult to trace those involved and recover stolen money, encouraging you to contact the police if you can. Thanks for your company today. We'll see you all tomorrow.
Biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet at Stephen Nolan.
This morning, policing yet again, and the situation in which we now are talking about police officers who are under criminal investigation during the GAA celebrations. Jim Allister on the programme saying the law's the law, no exceptions, look at the driving. We also understand that some of the police officers, some other police officers are under criminal investigation for putting the blue lights on, sounding the sirens. Is that over the top? Others, Alan McQuillan, for example, saying you can give a warning, you can have a word with someone, but is that proportionate? That's what we're discussing on the programme this morning.